this has the opportunity for the greatest turnaround in college football exists here today, and it's not one to be taken lightly.
A knee, that is going to do it. Your Kansas State Wildcats are the Big 12 champions. Tremaine Thompson will field it at the 5 to the 10, pass the numbers to the 20, 25, look out, 30. He's at the 40, to the midfield stripe, to the 40, down the far sideline, 10, 5, to the house, Wildcat touchdown for Tremaine Thompson.
Welcome to Bring On The Podcast. Here's your host, Aaron Alley.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Bring On The Podcast. I'm your host, as always, Luke Thompson. KSU Ima is here with us today. And our guest is a football columnist for TexAgs.com, which I believe is the premier Texas A&M site, I mean, as far as I can tell, yeah. Olin Buchanan. Olin, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me. We like to think we're the premier website that follows A&M.
Yeah, you guys seem to have that market pretty well locked down. Do a lot of great stuff.
Yeah, it's been good for us.
And so, I mean, coming into the Texas Bowl next week, K-State A&M, I feel like, and KSU, you might correct me if I'm wrong, but Kansas State fans feel pretty good about this season. You know, 8 wins. K-State was predicted 8th. Pretty solid year. Even a couple of the losses were real close. It seems like that may not be the case for A&M. You know, what's the fans' thoughts right now?
Well, there's some frustration. You know, before the season, if you would have said they're going to win 8 games and have a chance to win 9 in a bowl game, I think your average fan would have been pretty okay with it. Considering, you know, you're starting with a new quarterback again and some of the other rebuilding the offensive line and issues like that.
Yeah.
But when you're 7-1 later on and, you know, you just lost to Alabama, was reasonably competitive in that game within a touchdown going into the fourth quarter, and then you're ranked 4th in the initial college football playoff poll or ranking system, and then lose 3 of your last 4 games and look bad doing it. You know, when you put it in that context, you know, it's very frustrating. They're not happy. And it's really the third year in a row that A&M has tanked in the second half of the season.
Yeah, and we had Nick Leckie on last week, and, you know, he was just going off of memory. I guess he was saying, A&M won 6 in a row and then lost 6 in a row. That wasn't quite right, but it might have felt that way because they lost all 4 SEC games. Yeah, why do you think that's becoming a habit for this program?
Well, that's a heck of a good question. You know, they like to point to depth, and as the season wears on, maybe they get worn down somewhat, but they were talking at the beginning of the year, the coaches, that they finally had what they called SEC depth. So I don't know how you say that that's an asset in September and using it as an excuse in November. You know, there were some significant injuries. Myles Garrett being slowed down really hurt the defense. Trevor Knight started really strong this year, had a really, really good first half of the season. You know, he got hurt, and you know, that compromised the offense, but no excuses. This team should do better than that. That trend of fading in the second half, they got to figure out what the problem is and remedy that. And if they can't do it, then, you know, they'll probably need to, in the future, find somebody that maybe can.
Yeah.
You mentioned the Trevor Knight injury. How much did that injury affect the last couple games of the season where he did miss those games? How much did that affect the winnability of those games for A&M? Is there a belief that they should have won those games, you know, even without Knight being hurt?
Well, they were up 21-6 on Ole Miss at half at home and recovered an onside kick to open the second half, so they had the ball at midfield and still found a way to lose it. So they should have won that game even without Trevor. I think Jake Kubinek came in. He played okay. You know, he threw for about 213 yards and 2 touchdowns in that game. So he did all right. I mean, he's not as good as Trevor, he's definitely not the running threat. But again, you had a huge lead, well, a significant lead, and the ball at midfield to start the second half. So, and took a lead into the fourth quarter and just couldn't stop them. So I don't think that's an excuse, because Ole Miss in that game, their quarterback was a true freshman making his first collegiate appearance. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe A&M would have been able to beat Mississippi State had Trevor not gotten hurt early in that game. He got hurt, scored a touchdown. But again, the defense did not play well. So I don't know that just saying Trevor playing would have cured all their ills. I mean, even without Trevor, they were down a touchdown in the fourth quarter, needed to stop and get a chance to get the ball back, maybe tie it. And they couldn't get the stop. So, and then as LSU, Trevor did play. And the offense played well, and the defense didn't show up.
And so K-State fans obviously are somewhat familiar with Trevor Knight from his time at Oklahoma. You know, has he been more or less what you expected this year?
I think Trevor was even better than what was expected. Trevor came in, first of all, as you might expect, it was a divided locker room. It was fractured after, you know, two quarterbacks. Y'all heard about it. Mm-hmm. Transferred before the bowl game last year. Some of the guys like Kyle Allen. Some of them liked Kyler mm-hmm. Murray. And, it was a fragmented team. Trevor came in and immediately brought an element of leadership that this team sorely lacked. And they really galvanized in the spring behind him. And then he came in and played well. We knew that, you know, he's not the kind of guy that's going to throw for 3,000 yards, and that you're going to have to live with maybe some questionable decisions from him that lead to interceptions here and there. And there was that, but he ran the football pretty well, and he threw it well enough, and both of those things, you know, put them together. He was a pretty effective quarterback. They don't beat Arkansas without his running. He had a huge game running the ball against them, played well against Tennessee, played well against UCLA. So, again, they were, 6-0 with Trevor as the starting quarterback before they lost to Alabama. And he didn't play particularly well in that game, but, you know, that tends to happen to quarterbacks against Alabama. Yeah. So I think they feel like overall that they really got even more than they hoped for with Trevor.
With Knight, one thing, I live here in Oklahoma, so I'm probably even more familiar with him than a lot of K-State fans, but one thing that was mentioned when he during his time at Oklahoma was that the coaches here were scared to let him run. And when they did let him run, I think it was two or maybe 3 years ago at K-State, he ran all over K-State and just made him embarrassed him at home. Has he been more of a dual threat quarterback with A&M? Have they shown a tendency to allow him to go ahead and just run, you know, run the football, run, use the QB run to their advantage?
Oh, absolutely. You know, he's their second leading rusher. He's a run for almost 600 yards, 594. And, you know, again, he played, two series against Mississippi State, and then he missed all of two games after that. So, you know, he very well could have been around 800 yards had he stayed healthy. And then he's passed for over 2,000 yards and 16 touchdowns. You know, he's not a dual threat like, like the guy at Clemson or Louisville, but, you know, he's been a guy that, again, he runs very well and he passes well enough that you have to respect that. So I think the combination of the two made him very effective.
Yeah, and he also had some pretty good weapons on offense. One of them won't be there for the bowl game. We'll talk about him in a second. But, you know, is it fair to say Josh Reynolds is kind of the deep threat, and then Christian Kirk more the reliable guy that catches more passes?
Well, I really think they're both deep threats, but okay. Christian does catch more passes. They like to throw a lot of short things to him and see if he can break them. You know, he's a guy in the slot, and so he gets a lot of what you call horizontal passes, and they're hoping that you know, maybe he'll sidestep somebody and turn it into a big play, which really hasn't happened that often this year. I don't think they've blocked that, you know, those tunnel screens and things like that very well. Josh Reynolds is a big play guy, though. You know, they both have over 800 yards receiving. Josh is almost up to 900, and he's averaging 18.1 yards a catch. So Josh may be the most underappreciated. I don't know how this is going to sound coming from a guy who covers A&M. He may be the most underappreciated guy in the SEC when you look at the guys that made the All-SEC team. He probably should have been on there. I'm sure the guys at Arkansas would vote for him with the game he had against them with a kind of a back-breaking 92-yard touchdown catch. So he is a big play threat, but so is Christian. And Christian he had some big plays for touchdowns against LSU, and some other guy had a touchdown catch against Alabama. And then he's a big-time threat on kickoff returns. You know what? He probably doesn't look the part in terms of his body type, but in his production and the way he runs, he might remind some Kansas State guys. You know, they might watch him run and think his last name ought to be Lockett.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we've seen all different kinds of body types as far as good returners at Kansas State, for sure.
That's no doubt about it. So he's that kind of guy. Yeah, they're both big play threats, no doubt about it.
Mm-hmm. And then, so we got to talk about Speedy Noel. Got arrested, not going to play in the bowl game. So what does the offense miss with him out?
You know, I don't think it misses anything. He's been a guy that came here as a five-star recruit, very celebrated, coming out of New Orleans, was a quarterback, going to play receiver. And as a freshman, he had some of those moments that you say, wow, you know, look at that untapped potential. But after that, you know, by and large, he didn't reach any of that potential, and he's been in and out of trouble. I'd have to go back and double check. I think this is going to be the third year in a row that he didn't, you know, that he suspended for the bowl game. And they have a guy, Jeremy Tabuyo, I can never get it right. He's out of Honolulu, Hawaii. Mm-hmm. And he's a senior that's been a kid that's just been very productive. And frankly, in my opinion, he has been better than Speedy when he gets to play. You know, he has like only 12 catches, but you know, 215 yards. Well, Speedy's 21 for 325. So with a whole lot more opportunity. So I don't know. Yes, Speedy makes you, I guess, as a defensive coordinator, be concerned about the big play threat that he has. You know, like his nickname would indicate, he's very fast. And I don't know that Tabayo is as fast as Speedy. He does run pretty well, but I just think he's more reliable and has better hands.
Yeah. So I guess from what you're saying, then, is that the kind of absence that could potentially improve team chemistry?
Well, I don't know if it's going to improve team chemistry or not, but I just don't think that. Look, if it was Christian Kirk, which, by the way, he's a choir boy, so he's not ever going to get in trouble like that. But if it was Christian Kirk or Josh Reynolds, it would be a major factor and a cause for concern. With Speedy, you know, it's unfortunate. And again, he has vast potential, but the production really hasn't matched the potential.
Yeah.
Looking at, you know, we mentioned Speedy and it not looking like it's going to affect a ton of the offense there. What's the biggest weakness on the offense for A&M? And if there's something K-State could take advantage of there?
Well, the offensive line I'll say average at best. I think Avery Genesee at left tackle, he's an all-SEC guy. I think he'll play in the NFL. He's really good. Beyond that, they've been very hit and miss. It's a new offensive line. They've got a lot of, you know, they opened the season from guard to guard with a true freshman, a redshirt freshman, and a seldom used sophomore. And the sophomore was Connor Lanphier. He got hurt at the Mississippi State and has been out ever since. So they've had to juggle some things. So the big play element is still there, but there have been times they've had some issues in protection. That really hurt when Trevor was no longer playing because Trevor had that ability to evade some of that pass rush. And the running game, even though they have that big play element with Travion Williams, who's a 1,000-yard back, that offensive line has not consistently got a push. When it's third and one, I don't know that anybody that follows A&M is convinced or confident that A&M's going to pick it up because they just struggle with that in the offensive line. So that's the area where there's the most concern is being able to mount a long, consistent drive. And when you absolutely need to, pick up that tough yard or two or protect the quarterback if it's an obvious passing situation. They're good at the skill positions, no doubt about that. But the offensive line has been somewhat of a disappointment.
Yeah, and so I'm sure you probably know this, but a lot of K-State fans are going to be really happy to hear that because the defensive line is definitely the strength of this team. You know, Big 12 Defensive Player of the Year, Jordan Willis and Will Gary. So is that a pretty big concern for A&M going into this game?
I think so. I think any team that has a pretty good defensive line is going to give A&M some problems because, again, that offensive line has been so and sometimes they've looked pretty good, and other times, you know, you're thinking, you know, what did they forget how to play? Now, it's my understanding that Jordan Willis lines up on the opposing right tackle, which would put him against Jermaine Illuminor, who is not as good a pass blocker as Avery Genesee. I wonder if, since they've had a month to get ready, if they haven't toyed with the idea of maybe moving Genesee over, if that's the case, to try to get a more favorable matchup. But I know that Walker, he's got about 6.5 sacks too. So yeah. I don't think anybody's easy. I think A&M is going to be looking to they're going to be glad that Trevor's back there, and hoping that if he gets in that, you know, a strong pass rush, that he'll be able to elude it and make a play with his legs.
Yeah, I mean, that's the nice thing about this defensive line. I think, Kashima, when you said that there's really no weakness, I mean, who would you say is the weakest link on there?
Probably Keaton Sutherland. He's a sophomore that actually started as a true freshman half the season, but then lost his starting job to another true freshman, Colton Prater. He's a true freshman.
Oh, yeah, I knew Colton because I was in Shreveport, and, yeah, he was a great kid. I love that guy.
Yeah, he came in, and he won a starting job, and he's been starting since the first game. And so Keaton Sutherland came in as a starter back to the starting lineup when Connor Lanfear, the sophomore I was telling you about earlier, when he got hurt, they brought in Sutherland. And obviously, you know, again, here's a guy that wasn't starting, and now he is. So if I had to single out one guy that I think they're concerned about most, it would probably be him, even though I think the Jermaine Illuminor, he's a senior who came here 2 years ago as a junior college transfer. I think there might be some concern because, you know, simply the matchup with Jordan Willis, if that's the way it works out. They do love their redshirt freshman center, Eric McCoy. He has some issues every now and then, like you would expect a young offensive lineman to have, but he's been really good. I'd say he's been their second best lineman behind Avery Genesee.
Yeah.
Do you see Texas A&M doing anything to help mitigate the pass rush from Kansas State keeping a running back in the backfield to help block, adding an extra tight end on the line, anything like that to help?
Yeah, they'll do that. They've the guy that, you know, coming into the year we thought would be the starting right tackle as a sophomore, Coda Martin, and they've actually used him, put him at tight end at times to help with blocking and to run and pass blocking. So that could happen. Keith Ford, transfer from Oklahoma, he does a pretty nice job running the football and coming in and pass blocking, catches the ball out of the backfield pretty well too. I would think what they'll do more than bringing in another guy for extra pass protection and blocking is I think they would look to do some screens, anything to get rid of the ball quicker, and then also, you know, have some called run plays for Trevor, maybe to make Kansas State have to, you know, think twice before coming with everything they got on a run, pass rush.
Okay, well, let's switch over to the other side of the ball. Kansas State always brings kind of a different look for teams, especially in the Big 12. How often does A&M see an offense like this where they're going to be slow tempo and they're going to run the quarterback a lot and kind of lean heavily on the run game?
Well, you know, you see something like that with Arkansas, even though the quarterback doesn't run a lot. Auburn likes to run the football, and they run with the quarterback. Alabama, you know, everybody knows they're kind of pro style most of the time. You know, everyone knows they also added some spread element with Lane Kiffin, LSU. So I guess those are kind of similar. Mississippi State likes to run. And here's the deal about A&M this year. Their defense has struggled, especially against the run. And that's been the case for like the last 5 years. But this year, in Kansas State fans, I know are going to like to hear this. The teams that have given A&M the most trouble, without a doubt, are those teams with a running quarterback. They had all kinds of trouble. Mississippi State quarterback Nick Fitzgerald, he ran up and down the field on them for 200 yards. And then, you know, Jalen Hurts at Alabama ran well on them. Josh Dobbs at Tennessee ran. So quarterbacks or teams with a good running quarterback has given A&M all kinds of problems this year.
Mm-hmm.
What do you see A&M, what's their game plan on defense to help slow the run, especially the QB run, and maybe get it out of Ertz's hands and into maybe a running back or force Hurts to throw the ball? How do you see them trying to attack that?
Well, I'm sure they'll spy on him. You know, they'll try to have a linebacker or a safety, you know, watch his every move. Having Myles Garrett back and reasonably healthy, he's not going to be 100%, but he's not as back to 75%, I think, which is kind of where he felt like he was at LSU. Having him back, he makes so much, even at defensive end, he makes such a difference in the play of the entire defense. So that'll help. A&M's really not that bad in the defensive line. It's the linebacker play that really, you know, that really betrays them against the run. And I guess they're just going to be hoping that either A, with this month, that the light will click on for some of those guys who just don't have linebacker instincts, and or B, that I wouldn't be surprised if they brought in an extra defensive back and played with five DBs and have one of them close to the line of scrimmage, you know, playing kind of a hybrid linebacker position.
And you mentioned Myles Garrett. I kind of got to ask, you know, especially with Fournette and McCaffrey skipping the bowl games, and he's supposed to be the number one pick in the draft, although he hasn't declared yet, right?
Not officially,
yeah,
but
everybody kind of assumes.
I think if he decides to stay, that A&M fans can't ever ask for anything else for Christmas.
Yeah. So, but I mean, have there been a lot of questions?
We'll decide to stay just so he doesn't have to go to the Browns.
Yeah.
Actually, we asked him that directly this week. He kind of laughed and said, "Hey, if I decide to go to the NFL, and if it's the Browns or Jacksonville or whoever," he said that he would play as hard as he could, no matter who picked him. Mm-hmm. So,
but have there been questions for him and Coach Sullivan about why he's playing the bowl game?
Yeah, actually, there have been. I think you would be impressed with the answer. You know, he said, "This is my team, and we've been through a lot together, and I need to be out there for my team and playing, you know, as hard as I can and let them know that I'm fully committed to winning this game." He actually, after the Fournette and Christian McCaffrey things came out, he actually released a statement through the Sports Information Department. It was just a one-sentence thing saying, just want to make it clear that I'm going to be available at practice and I will play in the bowl game with my team. So he mm-hmm. takes the approach that, you know, that the season's not over and he's a big part of the team and the team means a lot to him. And so he's going to play football. He said that he doesn't criticize McCaffrey or Fournette or Shaq Linwood at Baylor for deciding to not play, that's their business, but he's going to play. As a matter of fact, his father even told him that he should consider not playing. Hmm. And he said, we asked him about how that conversation. He said, "No, Dad, you know, that's my team. I'm going to play." So yeah. I think it'd be great if a lot of players had the same kind of attitude that Myles Garrett has.
Yeah, good for him. Yeah, I forgot about Linwood. I kind of figure, you know, he's just giving up like most of the Baylor team did about 6 weeks ago.
Yeah, I think so. And I remember there was a guy from Oklahoma, defensive lineman Walker, that in November left the team to start training for the combine, I guess. But Myles is one of those guys, and you know, you can understand it too, because he has been dealing with a high ankle sprain that he suffered against Arkansas. And he's been in and out of the lineup all year, has not been nearly the same guy in the last seven or eight games that he was in the first four or five. So if he just said, "Hey, you know, because of my injury, I think it's best not to play," I think everybody could understand it. But that's just not the way he's wired. His team means something to him, and so he wants to play. Mm-hmm.
And the other guy I wanted to talk to you about on defense, and this is probably because he's from Shreveport, and I got a chance to talk with him early this season, was it Donovan Wilson. Seems like he's not been quite the playmaker he was last season when he was leading the SEC in interceptions, but you know, he's still making a lot of tackles and definitely has that playmaking ability. What does he bring to this defense?
You know, it's funny. John Chavis has compared him to Tyrann Mathieu. He calls him his next honey badger. And, you know, you're right. Donovan was amazing last season, with forcing turnovers and creating them, and it just hasn't been the same this year. I don't know that you can really count on it every year,
right?
But he's about, you know, fifth or sixth on the team in tackles. Mm-hmm. He's been productive.
Is he still playing nickelback
against Mississippi State that allowed them to stay in the game?
Yeah.
So he still is a playmaker. He just hadn't made quite as many this year, and a lot of that could be, you know, the way that teams knowing what he can do and opponents just trying to stay away from him a little bit more.
Yeah. Is he still playing nickelback?
Yeah, he's a lot of times, in fact, more often than not, A&M will come in with five DBs. And it's simply the rationale is, yeah, they could play three linebackers and sometimes probably should. But if you want to get your best 11 guys on the field, Donovan Wilson needs to be out there.
What do you think? They'll even do that against K-State, though, when K-State lines up with a fullback and a tight end?
You know, again, that'll be a tough call. They tried that last year against Alabama. Mm-hmm. And it didn't work out. Derrick Henry was running up and down the field. And so then when they adjusted, they did a better job against him. But no offense to Kansas State, I don't know if they have a Derrick Henry tie. So they might have better luck with it this year. But I don't know. And that'll be one of the interesting things to see the way John Chavis decides to play it, because they love having him on the field, Donovan Wilson. But, yeah, do you take that chance that'll – give you problems against a good running team, especially when you understand that, and you guys obviously know better than I do, but from what we understand, because we don't get to see Kansas State that often, not a prolific passing attack.
That's very generous of you to say.
Yeah. besides Ertz and his running ability and the QB run game, what area of the K-State offense is the biggest concern for Texas A&M?
Well, it's just the running game. Again, for the reasons that I mentioned earlier about the poor linebacker play. A&M's actually pretty good, like I said, the defensive line. Tayshaun Hall's a defensive end on the opposite Garrett. He's going to get a shot in the NFL. They got a pretty nice rotation at tackle. There's a guy, Kingsley Kiki, that is a sophomore that I think could be a star someday. He looks like he's really good. They have some other guys that play pretty well. But and you might notice that A&M has among the leaders in tackles for loss. But a lot of times in that run game, if they don't get to the backfield or at the line of scrimmage, then there's definitely a potential for a big play in the running game. That's been a problem for A&M. So against Kansas State's lesser passing attack, lesser than some of the other ones that they've seen this year, I would think that they're most concerned about their linebacker play and what they're going to do against the run. Now, but let me also say this. They went up against Danny Etling at LSU, who is a guy that does not throw the football very well and doesn't have a great reputation, had not been very productive. And Danny Etling looked like Danny Marino against the Aggies. So I don't think they can afford to just completely load up on the run and just discount Jesse Ertz as a passer, because if you can throw it there, against LSU, Etling only had to get it close, and it was, it was complete. They were playing so far off.
Yeah. Well, I guess we'll just hope that Ertz is a little bit better now that he's healthy, or I don't know how. He'll still probably need surgery after the season, so I don't think he's 100%, but healthier.
I think one of the things that A&M will have to really make a scouting report on it is just how good they think and how dangerous they think the Kansas State receivers are. And I don't see enough of Kansas State to make an educated guess. But A&M has had some. Their safeties are pretty good. Their corners are challenged, especially Nick Harvey, who's really had a problem giving up big plays and again playing way off of receivers. So smart old bird like Bill Snyder is going to see that, just like everybody else. I'm sure he's going to come up with all kinds of ways to try to take advantage of A&M shortcomings.
I feel like the general consensus is that Kansas State receivers are probably a year away from being a really good group, but if they want to get started in the bowl game, that would be great.
Yeah, nobody.
Again, this A&M defense has been up and down, and lately it's been more down than up. If there's ever a time that you might feel like somebody's going to take a step forward, it's been against A&M, especially of late.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned earlier about the thought process of players not choosing to skip bowl games to prep for the NFL, and right. You hear every year about motivation and going into bowl games. How motivated is A&M going into this bowl game? Do you think they're going to come out flat, or do you think they'll come out, inspired and ready to play the game?
Well, that is a heck of a question, and it's a tough one to answer. I mean, when you thought at one point that you had a chance to get into the playoff, again, they were ranked number four in the first college football playoff standings, or whatever you want to call them, and you would have thought that that would be a team that would go to Mississippi State and be sky high and motivated, and they came out flat. And frankly, I haven't seen a team that looked that interested, or maybe that's being unfair, but it seems like it's been a team that's that for whatever reason hasn't been as intense or just as played as well as you would expect. You know, again, they had the 21-6 point lead against at halftime against Ole Miss and didn't show up in the second half. They played Texas San Antonio and, you know, got a very unimpressive 23-10 win. And then LSU, they scored 39 points. But most of those is after the game was already decided. You knew that they weren't going to win. Maybe they're looking at it and say, hey, this is a chance for redemption. It's a Big 12 team, which you might all know or be able to imagine that that's a big deal at Texas A&M. They still have, hard feelings toward the Big 12. And so maybe for all those reasons, it'll be something to, you know, to inspire them. And I will say this, they have typically played well in the bowl games under Kevin Sumlin. They, you know, beat Oklahoma that first year really bad, came back and beat Duke a couple of years ago. They beat West Virginia. And even last year, almost pulled one out against Louisville. Bill, a call was rightfully reversed in the last minute where it put them inside the five. So they had a chance to beat Louisville too. So they have played well in bowl games. But based on what we've seen the last month of the season, it's hard for me to just say I would absolutely expect them to come out fired up and intense and all those things. They might be flat because they've been flat for, you know, the last month of the season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, unfortunately, Kansas State's record in bowl games recently, not so great. But so you mentioned maybe some more excitement with the Big 12 team. I assume you're kind of talking about the fans and stuff there. We had Nick Nethy on last week. You know, the players, have none of them have been in the Big 12. I don't know how much that matters. But I guess I wanted to ask, I'm sure maybe a lot of fans, maybe some players would have rather seen Kenny Hill and TCU, but is there kind of some kind of excitement to play K-State, and is there some respect for Bill Snyder?
Oh, gosh, yes. And, you know, and there's a big concern about Bill Snyder because I think the feeling down here is that no matter what the talent level is at Kansas State, you know they're going to be physical. You know they're going to not beat themselves, and they're going to be very fundamental. And frankly, those are some of the things that A&M has troubles with. So there's great respect for Bill Snyder. And, you know, they haven't played in a while, but there's the knowledge that Kansas State's won the last three games and that there is some great history between the two programs and, you know, going back to the 98 Big 12 championship game and things like that. So I think there's a very healthy respect. I know that word's overused in college football, but in this case, it really applies for Bill Snyder and Kansas State. I think Aggies kind of look at Kansas State and see some of themselves in the way, you know, Kansas State fans are, you know, see some similarities. I would say that they probably have of all the Big 12 teams, they probably have the least issue with West Virginia because they weren't, you know, in the Big 12 when A&M was. And then after that, probably Kansas State. But it's still a Big 12 team. Yeah. And I guarantee you those players hear it all the time from everybody they talk to about, you know, they are reminded and they're very well aware of how much, you know, the general A&M fan base detests everything Big 12 related.
Yeah. And so you mentioned the 98 championship game. So we'll go ahead and talk about it. But I wanted to ask you, so, you know, in 2003, of course, Kansas State was a three-loss, big underdogs against Oklahoma, won that game. And I look at that as sort of a signature moment of Snyder's career, sort of my generation of Kansas State fans. And I was just wondering if, you know, A&M was sort of in a similar position in 98. Does it stand out as that kind of big-time moment for A&M fans, do you think?
Oh, I think that win was one of the, you know, we actually last year, last spring, rated the top 50 A&M wins of all time in their history. And that was like, I can't remember exactly where we had that one ranked, but I'm pretty sure it was a top 10 moment. A&M hasn't won a conference championship since that one. That, you know, and they haven't beaten, I can't remember if Kansas State was number one or number two going into that game, but they haven't beaten many teams that were in the top three ever, especially at that point. And so to win that game, to win their last conference championship like they did in that game, and the manner in which they did it, when it looked like the game was over, and then Michael Bishop with the fumble that Warwick Holden.
Yeah, we know.
Right. Yeah. And then, of course, you know, people down here sometimes they have to be reminded that, you know, Kansas State threw that Hail Mary at the end of regulation, and the guy who caught it got tackled at the 1 yard line. So it was a, you know, just an amazing, amazing win, and one of the, like I said, one of the probably 10 greatest moments of Texas A&M football.
Mm-hmm. And I apologize to all of our listeners for putting you through that. But so I guess while we're on that subject of the SEC, you know, are there any A&M fans that ever regret leaving the Big 12, do you think?
Oh, I think, you know, there's some. I think there's some that would say, hey, you know, if we'd still been in the Big 12, might have won the national championship in 2012. And I think there's, you know, that would have been a possibility, especially considering that A&M that year beat Alabama in Tuscaloosa, and Alabama won the national championship, and Johnny Manziel, they had five number one draft choices just on the offense on that team. So there's that. But by and large, you know, A&M, they just poured all kinds of money into the program. The stadium had a $480 million renovation. It went from being basically a hunk of concrete that was an eyesore into as beautiful a facility as you'll find anywhere. And I don't think any of those things like that, you know, they've done all kinds of construction around the athletics, not just football. None of that happens if they were still in the Big 12. And I think for A&M, it was, you know, they felt like Texas had too much control in the Big 12 and that Texas was always trying to tell them what to do. And I think they were a team that felt like they needed to, they had enough and they needed to get away from Texas. And by moving away from the Big 12, they're also, you know, firstly moving away from Texas, but feeling like the Big 12 was synonymous with Texas and feeling like the Big 12 commissioner at the time let Texas run the show. And so there's hard feelings and that's why they wanted to get out. And yeah, would the competition be easier? Maybe, maybe it would, but I think they feel like the greater gains were there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think most Big 12 members, except for maybe Oklahoma, would agree with you about the Texas thing.
Probably.
I guess the only regret for A&M might be that they couldn't find a way to get into the East Division like Missouri did, right?
I think they would love to have been in the East Division, especially the last couple of years. When you keep getting your head beat in by LSU and Alabama, you might look over there and say, you know, Georgia and Florida are kind of down. Maybe it'd be a good time to be in the East. But, you know, Florida looks like they may be getting better under McElwain, and they have to go out to Gainesville next year. So we'll see if they feel the same way next season when they're going out to Gainesville.
Yeah. And so early in this podcast, we were talking about A&M kind of last three seasons has been the same, start off great and then fade toward the end. How many more seasons like that can Sumlin have and still keep his job?
Well, you know, I think one. And I think if they wouldn't have to pay him $10 million, that he might not have, you know, get through this season. He might, but I think they're going to – he will maintain his job or he'll retain his job. And then I think he'll come into next season. I would be surprised if 8 wins is good enough for him to maintain his job next season, because he's getting paid like a coach that's won a championship at $5 million mm-hmm. a year. And I think when you're making that kind of investment, I don't know. Think you go in saying, hey, you have to win the SEC championship. But I think there are those that understand – when Alabama and Nick Saban's got it rolling the way they do, that it's going to be asking quite a lot to win the championship. But you can't keep finishing fourth or lower and make $5 million, I don't think. And so I would anticipate that he'll be back next season. Now, if Kansas State goes out there and embarrasses A&M in Houston, then, you know, there may be some that'll take a second look at that. I don't think so, but I wouldn't totally discount it. I would think, though, that he'll be back and that he'll have, you know, he'll have some standards he's going to have to reach that are higher than what they done that. You know, when you keep winning eight games, that looks good until you start thinking about three of them, or at least are always scheduled wins with an easy non-conference opponent. And then, you know, they've been getting a pretty good break on the teams they play in the from the East Division. They get South Carolina, which has been struggling. They've had Vanderbilt a couple of times. You know, they haven't really – those eight wins can be deceiving.
Sure. All right. Well, I think that it's about time to wrap it up. Olin, we really appreciate you coming on.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Yeah. And so people can read your stuff at TexAgs.com. And how can they follow you on Twitter? What's your handle?
Just with my name, Olin Buchanan, OlinBuchanan on Twitter. And oh, we'll put some stuff there every now and then to see if we can get a reaction.
All right. Well, yeah, thanks a lot. And hopefully we'll see another exciting game next week.
Yeah, well, we're counting on it.
All right, I'm Luke Thompson, signing off.